Blog Talk Radio.
Well, let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The political, the economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled and misguided are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out. And you and I are in a double trap, because not only do we lose by taking our money someplace else and spending it, when we try and spend it in our own community, we're trapped because we haven't had sense enough to set up stores and control the businesses of our community. The man who's controlling the stores in our community is a man who doesn't look like we do. He's a man who doesn't even live in the community. So you and I, even when we try and spend our money in the block where we live or the area where we live, we're spending it with a man who, when the sun goes down, takes that basket full of money in another part of the town. So we're trapped, double trapped, triple trapped. Anywhere we go, we find that we're trapped. And every kind of solution that someone comes up with is just another trap. But the political and economic philosophy of black nationalism, the economic philosophy of black nationalism shows our people the importance of setting up these little stores and developing them and expanding them into larger operations. Woolworth didn't start out big like they are today. They started out with a dime store and expanded and expanded and expanded until today they're all over the country and all over the world, and they're getting some of everybody's money. Now, this, what you and I and General Motors, the same way, didn't start out like it is. It started out just a little rat race type operation, and it expanded and expanded until today it's where it is right now. And you and I have to make a start. And the best place to start is right in the community where we live. So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community. And once you can create some employment in the community where you live, it will eliminate the necessity of you and me having to act ignorantly and disgracefully boycotting and picketing some cracker someplace else trying to dang him for a job. Anytime you have to rely upon your enemy for a job, you're in bad shape. When you and he is your enemy, anything, you wouldn't be in this country if some enemy hadn't kidnapped you and brought you here. On the other hand, some of you think you came here on the Mayflower. So as you can see, brothers and sisters, today, this afternoon, it's not our intention to discuss religion. We're going to forget religion. If we bring up religion, we'll be in an argument. And the best way to keep away from arguments and differences, as I said earlier, put your religion at home, in the closet. Keep it between you and your God. Because if it hasn't done anything more for you than it has, you need to forget it anyway. Whether you are a Christian or a Muslim or a nationalist, we all have the same problem. They don't hang you because you're a Baptist, they hang you because you're black. They don't attack me because I'm a Muslim, they attack me because I'm black. They attack all of us for the same reason. All of us catch hell from the same enemy. We're all in the same bag, in the same boat. We suffer political oppression, economic exploitation, and social degradation. All of them from the same enemy. The government has failed us. You can't deny that. Anytime you live in the 20th century, 1964, and you walking around here singing, "We shall overcome," the government has failed us. This is part of what's wrong with you. You do too much singing. Today it's time to stop singing and start swinging. You can't sing up on freedom, but you can swing up on some freedom. Cassius Clay can sing, but singing didn't help him to become the heavyweight champion of the world. Swinging helped him. But this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program. A do-it-yourself philosophy. A do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it, you can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. You can stay in any kind of civic organization that you belong to and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. You can be an atheist and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. This is a philosophy that eliminates the necessity for division and argument. Because if you're black, you should be thinking black. And if you're black and you're not thinking black at this late date, well, I'm sorry for you. Once you change your philosophy, you change your thought pattern. Once you change your thought pattern, you change your attitude. Once you change your attitude, it changes your behavior pattern. And then you go on into some action. As long as you got a sit-down philosophy, you'll have a sit-down thought pattern. And as long as you think that old sit-down thought, you'll be in some kind of sit-down action. They'll have you sitting in everywhere. It's not so good to refer to what you're going to do as a sit-in. That right there castrates you. Right there it brings you down. What goes with it? What think of the image of someone sitting? An old woman can sit. An old man can sit. A chump can sit. A coward can sit. Anything can sit. Well, you and I have been sitting long enough, and it's time today for us to start doing some standing and some fighting to back that up. When we look at other parts of this earth upon which we live, we find that black, brown, red, and yellow people in Africa and Asia are getting their independence. They're not getting it by singing, "We shall overcome." No, they're getting it through nationalism. It is nationalism that brought about the independence of the people in Asia. Every nation in Asia gained its independence through the philosophy of nationalism. Every nation on the African continent that has gotten its independence brought it about through the philosophy of nationalism. And it will take black nationalism that to bring about the freedom of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country where we have suffered colonialism for the past 400 years. America is just as much a colonial power as England ever was. America is just as much a colonial power as France ever was. In fact, America is more so a colonial power than they, because she's a hypocritical colonial power behind it. What do you call second-class citizenship? Why, that's colonization. Second-class citizenship is nothing but 20th century slavery. How are you going to tell me you're a second-class citizen? They don't have second-class citizenship in any other government on this earth. They just have slaves and people who are free. Well, this country is a hypocrite. They try and make you think they set you free by calling you a second-class citizen. No, you're nothing but a 20th century slave. Just as it took nationalism to remove colonialism from Asia and Africa, it'll take black nationalism today to remove colonialism from the backs and the minds of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country. And 1964 looks like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet. Why does it look like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet? Because Negroes have listened to the trickery and the lies and the false promises of the white man now for too long. And they're fed up. They've become disenchanted. They've become disillusioned. They've become dissatisfied. And all of this has built up frustrations in the black community that makes the black community throughout America today more explosive than all of the atomic bombs the Russians can ever invent. Whenever you got a racial powder keg sitting in your lap, you're in more trouble than if you had an atomic powder keg sitting in your lap. When a racial powder keg goes off, it doesn't care who it knocks out the way. Understand this, it's dangerous. And in 1964, this seems to be the year. Because what can the white man use now to fool us? After he put down that march on Washington, and you see all through that now, he tricked you, had you marching down to Washington. Yes, had you marching back and forth between the feet of a dead man named Lincoln and another dead man named George Washington, singing, "We Shall Overcome." He made a chump out of him. He made a fool out of him. He made you think you were going somewhere and you end up going nowhere but between Lincoln and Washington. So today our people are disillusioned. They've become disenchanted. They've become dissatisfied. And in their frustrations they want action. And in 1964, you see this young black man, this new generation, asking for the ballot or the bullet. That old Uncle Tom action is outdated. The young generation don't want to hear anything about the...
We'll be born and raised up
in Cuba.
We ain't gonna play this play,
no
game
with
separated from my language, separated from my friends. But is it investigation? Are the Holocaust girls that I protect? And just like all of
them. This young lady right there.
I'd like to make a comment, Mr. Malcolm. Now, you're right, of course, the black people are in the West. They have had the worst treatment. But isn't it also possible that if the white people, the poor people, the people down in my neighborhood, the white people, those that don't work, those that are on welfare, those that have nothing, if they got together too, and you help us, we'll help you. You help us get up there. You help us get rid of some of these people that are pressing down on us.
No, I say you should be just as active in your neighborhood as we're trying to, as you have been in our neighborhood.
All right, we get our neighborhood so hot. Everybody's going for something. We alone, there are too few of us. There are too many men up there with all their cop cars and everything.
That's what they're always telling you. Never let your enemy tell you how many of you there are. Never let the man that you're against form your opinion. This is the trick that's played on everyone who's oppressed. The first thing, an occupation, when you have a revolution in the country, the first thing you take over is the radio. And then you start telling the people that everybody, the war is over. And so all of them surrender. No, they believe that thing right there. And once they take that over, they start telling you where you are and where they are, and you fall right in line. It's plain thought control. The majority of the American people aren't segregationists. That the majority of the American people aren't imperialists. But the government is, the structure is, the power faction is. So, how then do all the majority go along with it? Because those who sit in power over the television, over the radio, and over the press is constantly telling those who are the masses how free they are. And how this they are and how that they are. So a mistake is made on your part when you think that white people suffer the same as black people. Or as many Jews will say, well, we're a minority too. Or the Irish will say, well, we used to be a minority. No one's a minority like we are. They didn't need civil rights legislation to solve any other minority problems. It didn't take a civil war to solve any other minority problem. It didn't take Supreme Court decisions to solve any other minority problem or legislation. It takes none of that other kind of that action to solve the minority problems of these other people. The only real minority in America is the Afro-American. Now, when white people who are oppressed and poor, supposedly, but the poorest white person can go where the richest black person can't go. It isn't only poverty in money. That we're talking about, poverty in spirit, poverty in freedom, poverty in equality, poverty in human dignity. This is the kind of poverty we're suffering from. So that the richest Negro in this country is still poor. When it comes to freedom, he's broke. When it comes to human dignity, he's broke. This is the kind of poverty we're talking about. So when you find white people who are poor, with all these doors that there are open to them, any door that you knock on, if you're qualified, it'll open. So when you find a poor white person, he's in bad shape. You didn't know.
consciousness. Without human consciousness, there is no world. It is the presence of human consciousness that brings meaning into the world. Without human beings in this world, conscious human beings in this world, in effect, there would not be a world. We bring the world into being through our consciousness. And through our consciousness, we create the world we live in. Out of the totality of reality, our consciousness cuts out a world that befits itself. In other words, the kind of world you exist in reflects the kind of consciousness that you have. And notice, if you change your consciousness or change your values and orientation, you enter into a different world. You interact with different people. People often that you didn't even know existed in the world. Social situations that you might not have even recognized until you entered into a new level of consciousness. You see people, say, for instance, who become addicted, say, to crack or something, and now enter into a whole world and enter into a whole social system that before they became addicted, they hardly noticed. They didn't know what it was all about. And they picked up new friends and new relations, whole new ways of acting, whole new purposes in life. They lost old friends, broke with old families, all kinds of things. In other words, the consciousness, that addictive consciousness, brought into the world a new foreground and put other things into the background. Therefore, man's consciousness is a creative act. And the kind of consciousness you have will determine the kind of world you create. And consequently, when you look at the world that we live in, African people, we must recognize to a great extent it is a world of our own creation. It is a world that has been generated by the type of consciousness we've been permitted to be instilled in us as a people.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, some of us will probably catch it on TV with chicken hanging from our mouths. You'll know it's revolution because there won't be no commercial. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
Preacher pimps are gonna split the scene with the communion wine stuck in their back pockets. Faggots won't be so funny then, and all the junkies will quit their nod and wake up when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, transit cops will be crushed by the trains after losing their guns, and blood will run through the streets of Harlem, drowning anything without substance. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. I hope pearly white teeth fall out of the mouths that speak of revolution without reference. The course of revolution is 360 degrees. Understand the cycle that never ends. Understand the beginning to be the end, and nothing is in between but space and time that I make or you make to relate or not to relate to the world outside my mind.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned to In Defense of the People, Tuesday night weekly broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chair Ned Turner, co-host myself, Brother Motherland, National Minister of Defense, and our engineers on the ones and twos, Sister Amina, National Minister of Communication, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Please press 1 to participate so that way we know you're on and we know you want to be a part of the show. Tonight's topic, the effects of imagery on our children and our take on the 4th of July. The effects of imagery on our children and our take on the 4th of July. We're going to open up our phone lines to our national chair, Matt Turner. Black Power and Uhuru, Conrad, can you hear me?
I don't remember, yes, sir. Yeah, black power, all power to the people.
Black power.
Welcome those who listen to another segment in defense of people radio, political education is our key, the key to alleviating the constant wars that we face collectively in this country. It is a process, a certain level of understanding, you know, to clear up all the bullshit, to lay all the rhetoric to rest, the romanticisms about freedom, abstract notions of it, in real time. You can't be what you don't know nor conquer what you don't understand. It's clear it's not here someday. People of African descent, this country, are in a situation that has gotten more dire, contrary to these outward appearances, these illusions about having a black president and all this other shit. It's a personal conflict, personal goals on the part of individuals who have been and will continue to be disconnected, aloof from the average brother and sister, our collective problems. The liberalism won't do, not even reform. And we're going to get to that part when we give our take on the 4th of July, because the so-called leaders of the American colonies didn't ask the British Crown to reform shit. Let's make that clear. They didn't ask them reform nothing. Their minds were made up. You know, some of these things gonna bring up maybe new to some people. You know, knowledge is infinity. You never stop learning till the day you die, and that's the law of nature. Some of us have been stunted in our growth. And that's by design. You know, rather collectively, there are those of us who have slipped through the cracks, so to speak, and have gone on to exercise a type of state of mind, a conscious level that eventually becomes a responsibility, you know, to try to teach the rest of us. And those who have come in our midst and have been examples of that, you know, and particularly the great Malcolm X, that he taught us how to be, you know, critical thinkers, to really think things through, to pierce through things and make sense of the shit. And if there's a love or appreciation for oneself, you know, there'll be a love, appreciation for the next brother and sister. And on and on and on, each one teach one, you know. We'll pick up where we started last week. It was around that point where I was talking about, you know, the movie industry. Certain movies that are made rather subtle, subliminally. But they're designed to program our youth into a particular way of thinking about reality, about their reality, about imagery, and what it does. Becomes ingrained in their minds. And once you internalize something, you naturally will act it out. Project it forward. You know what I'm saying? This is what the media wing of the state, what is the state, politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police who work hand in glove, a concerted effort to keep the hierarchy intact, the white male at the top, the structure intact, destructive capitalism, which is a predatory system managed to disguise herself like the old saying, the wolf in the sheep's clothing, and the sheep having an idea that it's a wolf that looks just like them, and began to realize that only when it's too late for a lot of them, and they become casualties of the wolf. That in the two-legged version is black people in particularly, race and class. We come to other groups such as, you know, brown people, so to speak, these labels that we understand, you know, the so-called red man and whatnot. And of course, the poor whites who have constantly had their own antagonistic relationship with the rich white ruling class. We won't be very clear on these things so you can just get understanding. And of course, as well as the depths as a piece of political party, our understanding. It's not anything that happened overnight. It took a while for some of us to get to certain points that the rest of us will eventually reach in our group collectively as a party, a revolutionary party, People's Political Party. We're a Black Panther Party oriented and Garvey influenced, Marcus Garvey influenced. But as I was saying, the movies that Will Smith had been in, you know, if you take a look at his movies and how the movies are set up and how the movies are designed, like these futuristic movies, you know, he's played in. It's no coincidence that he's played in these futuristic movies and verging on an apocalypse, something that had taken place, something that had gone terribly wrong. The planet had, you know, pretty much come under cataclysm. In, you know, life, whatnot, and, you know, these creatures, these aliens, or whatever you want to call them. I believe that movie was I Am Legend. And noticeably, he's a doctor, he's a scientist, you know, government and whatnot. In the beginning of the movie, you know, you see there's this quarantine, this thing, this transport and people, all this shit is subliminal, and then we don't really be understanding that. We're thinking it's just a movie, but it's showing you the potential that this country has. You know, but anyway, you see where he has his wife and this you know, his child and what, and she's a black woman, of course, the child is black, and that as far as they went, you know, where they had to separate, you know, whatnot. She was allowed to fly on this flight or whatever, or the child or whatnot, and he's scanning people and all this kind of shit. But it's very subtle, it's very subliminal. As our youth are looking at this type of movie, we're taking all that in. You know, we're taking this shit in. You know, and then as the movie progresses, he runs into subliminally a replacement of his wife and child. His wife and child have been relegated, have been downgraded, you know, from black to brown to yellow to white. Okay, picture it like that. His wife had been downgraded to Latina, you know, which is the Latina woman in the movie. And I think she had a son, I believe. But his black wife had been downgraded. And then in the end, he does the ultimate, and this is a norm in these movies. This is a pattern. This is a conscious decision collectively on part of Hollywood psychology. He sacrificed his life so the Latina woman and her child could live into the future, and that's how he become I Am Legend. He became a legend and the story to tell off into the future. There was this legend about so-and-so, so-and-so, who saved humanity, you know, but he couldn't save himself, and he could not end up
with his own wife and child. So if our youth is looking at that, it registers in their minds, I can leave her, I can lose her, and I can get this. You see, it's a subtle, it's a subtleness to it. And that's imagery. All right, now that's one move. And of course, you know, he ends up, you know, his best friend became, you know, his companion was the dog, you know, German Shepherd. Now that's one movie, the movie I, Robot. You know, this futuristic shit, you know, future technology on crime and criminals and whatnot, the robotic industry, you know, the robots are taking over and all this kind of stuff. And there's this elixir that comes the central focus of the movie, right? And then the white woman enters the picture. And she enters the picture, and then they wind up moving together. You know, I believe she is a scientist. I'm trying to, but he, you know, he's his cop. But in the end, there's this robot, and there's this tussle over these elixir, and they're up in this high place, and the woman is falling. You know. And he's telling the robot to do one thing while he does the other. So it becomes between the elixir and the woman. You know what I'm saying? I can remember this correctly. But the whole point was to save her white life from falling to her death. And she becomes the central focus. You choose this or you choose that. He risks his life to save her life. You know, the damsel in distress, cast type and roles like type shit. You know, and so in other words, where there's a white hero that saves the white girl in the movie, they replace him with the black dude in the movie. He's gonna be a hero. He's not placed in the movie to be the hero to rescue the black woman in the movie. He's replaced. His replacement is the, how should we say it, white man in black skin replacement, which means it's the same psychology. He becomes just important to him. She is important to her white male partner. And that's the subliminal message behind it. And so he's willing to put his life on the line to save hers, you know, the model looking chick, you know, the slender looking chick, you know, beauty in the eyes of the beholder kind of thing. And when our boys look at that, they can't see no black woman in the picture. So when they become teenagers, then they've internalized it. Or if they're a teenager watching it, of course, you know this stuff about parents allowing their, you know, their children or ex, whatever age, you know, I go to watch movies and all this kind of shit. You know, back in the G, it was like rated R, way to PG and all this kind of shit. They done totally wiped that out of there. They done totally wiped the picture out. They done totally wiped that whole ratings, all that stuff out of there. They wiped that shit out of it because, you know, their whole point, the whole design was to make that shit go and their ambitions off into the future. We're going to wipe all this out. And some of us even said that we saw it coming, that before too long they're going to be allowing profanity in the movies, to where back in the D you see the movie coming on, this movie has been formatted, you know, for, you know, for a TV audience, meaning it was edited, so it took out, you know, the profanity and whatnot. You know, they were, when they shoot the movies, they do two takes where the one line has, you know, listen motherfucker, job ass motherfucker, you know, they do two takes on that. And then the you know, the conservative portion of it, or the, you know, whatever, right, they can be played on TV. He said, listen, job sucker, you know, listen, job sucker. You know, some of us have seen American Gangster when Frank goes to see I forget his name, Nicky Barnes in his club. You know, and you know, he put a leech on it, man, you sucker. That's not the original line. But you just give you an idea of what they was doing. But they wiped all of that out to further lobotomize our youth mind, to further do. Oh, it's cool. It's all right. It's cool, you know. You can watch a movie in front of your parents. It's cool. They cussing. You know, back in the day, we couldn't do that. We couldn't do that. But it's the imagery. And the imagery says that her white life is more important than this black life. And it's more important than his black, then it's way much more important than a black female life. And so our youth internalize that as teenagers, and when we grow up to be young adults and whatnot, off into our 30s, 40s, 50s, then we don't internalize it, then we no longer can see the black woman in the picture. So when we get out there, it's cool. It's cool to, you know, to taste all flavors of the ice cream. It's cool. It's cool. It's all right. Now let's get something clear here, you know, for those who may, you know, get ahead of themselves. Let's get something clear. A law of nature says that when two different groups of people are in one environment together, that naturally there will be some miscegenation due to a law of nature of them being human beings. There will be some miscegenation. But that shit has nothing to do with something that's mechanical or something that's artificial. When it's mechanical, when it's artificial, then that means some mind is behind it. Like there's artificial plants, artificial roses that look real from a distance. So it's two different things. You dig? That's what it is. So by design, this is the imagery that our boys, our youth, our young adults take on. And we can't see the black woman in the picture. And this is by design. This is by design how to keep those who are your subjects off balance. And of course it'll naturally start with the men, the males. Because after all, when it's winter time and those who live in the rural areas had the old fireplace and that shit like that, it was natural for the man to go out there and take the axe and chop up a block of wood and bring it inside the place and put it in the fire. Keep the house warm. While the woman was in the kitchen cooking, the man didn't have the apron on, and she didn't have the axe in her hand. So these are laws of nature. So let's be clear on that. But by design, that's the whole point of it all. So the iRobot mover off into the future says what? Now this elixir thing is like the elixir of life, like, you know, like the blue pill and the red pill and In the Matrix movies, you know, when they ask Neo, Neo, you take the which one you want, the blue pill or the red pill, when you're going on this path, on this journey, you know. So it's the elixir of life, you know, and that's what that movie was based on. You know, in the end, she becomes a central figure. You know, you save that while I'm going to save her. You know, she's important. She's become the equal of the elixir in the movie. And so this is the damsel in distress being saved by a black version of the white hero, a colored version of the white hero. So let us ask ourselves, which movies have been made where the black woman is in the movie, the damsel in distress, and there's been a black actor who goes to save her? Now let's swap that around. Whereas a black woman is a damsel in distress. And this is the movie this was an instrumental movie in Hollywood and imagery and everything with Whitney Houston in the movie Bodyguard. In the movie Bodyguard. And the white boy is her bodyguard. His name escapes me right now. But the white boy is the bodyguard. And naturally where it leads to, you know, developing some affection. So here's the white boy that's there to save the black damsel in distress. So now we three down. You got the white boy who saves the white girl as a damsel in distress. Then you got a black version of him who saves the white girl who's the damsel in distress. And then you got the damsel in distress, which is going to be a black damsel in distress in the movie. Then it's got to be the white boy that saved her. And so when our youth see that, our young males and our young adults see that, we can't see ourselves saving her. and we can't see ourselves saving her, then we can't see ourselves being with in the first place. And this is by design. And older people, you wonder why, you know, young brothers, young dude out there doing the things that they're doing, the treatment that young black women get, young teenage girls get, by some young teen dudes. You know, and this is the crucial component, the crucial part of the whole shit. You got these people with these talk shows, national syndicated talk shows and whatnot, opening all these people to have these talk shows, the little model chick and all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? All these people, the new girl, Sherry, whatever her name is. You know what I'm saying? Where you going to hear this at? Where you going to catch this at? When that's going to become a conversation? You know, when that's going to become a conversation? You know, over who Garth Brooks is dating? Over who paid how much for a pair of boots, you know, a Fendi bag or whatever that shit is. You know, who's sleeping with who? Who was out? Who got spotted with who out at the restaurant last night? And all that kind of shit. Pure entertainment. Pure entertainment to keep your mind numb. To keep you keep you stuck on stupid. No, well they got to get you stuck on stupid first, and then keep you stuck on stupid. So it's a process. So to get you stuck on blind, and then to keep you stuck on blind. Now his movie Focus, which was shot in New Orleans, as a matter of fact, there's no coincidence that scene where they show her coming from the top of the steps with the red dress on. All that subliminal. That color red is crucially subliminal. And there's no coincidence in a movie called Focus. Okay, focus on what then? And so what they do is they play with your mind. They give you 3, 4, 5 different focuses. You know, focus on how the game go. Focus, you must stay focused. Or you'll get caught doing these heist things, these heist gigs. You must stay focused. But what's the real, true reason of the ultimate focus in the movie? What's the real one that's disguised by the rest of them? Well, we find that out in the end. It's her. Margot Robbie, some white chick from Australia, who is a descendant of the white British who came and confiscated the Australian region a couple of centuries ago. So this is why you hear some people from Australia, it sounds like the people who speaking and talking in Britain. They got the same similar accent. So here's this Margot Robbie girl enters the scene, and all of a sudden she's the hottest thing going. She's hot. See, that's by design. That's imagery. So since we're talking about Margot Robbie, matter of fact, they played in another movie together. Right, like these superheroes or whatever. She's almost like a female version of the Joker, the Riddler, you know, the old Batman shit back in the G, you know what I'm saying? You know, a bit psychotic and shit like that. Right, like some of the white girls, remind you of some of the white girls who you know, do that female wrestling shit, you know, in the ring and stuff like that, you know, the kind of psychology, the show that they put on, right? So they have chosen her to play in what? In the big screen version of Barbie. Barbie's a little doll. And I talked about that, I believe, or mentioned it. Mattel and all these people who make these hamburgers, who make the dolls and whatnot, toys and all that kind of shit. So she's chosen to play Barbie. Right? Blonde hair, blue eyes. You know, that's what the Barbie started off as. And so they put it on the big screen. And as I said, they produce these movies, these cartoons, these images, every so-so for every generation. It seems like every 19 years they're reproducing them. They just keep remaking them. You know, Superman was black and white. So that means some of our parents is watching this shit. Grandparents is watching that shit back in the 60s, the 50s, Superman, Clark Kent, who became Superman. And I believe it was Lois Lane, who would crush on Superman, who liked Superman, Clark Kent, the name Clark Kent, right? So they reproduced it. And then they keep reproducing. And then they keep reproducing. And it will keep reproducing. And the imagery is white. And so some black people start complaining who catch on actually what I'm saying, who actually catching on what I'm saying. You know, you see the same shit. I'm quite sure I'm not the same little brother, that's seeing it. I'm just saying, there'll be some black people who caught on to it and start complaining, start making a little noise, So what does the Hollywood wing of the state do? Well, shit. Let's get these niggas a black one. That don't mean shit, though. I don't mean nothing. You know? Because one's genetically black don't mean he or she is black. That's why they got black people and genetically black people. Those not the same people. I mean, people used to tell like this, sort of like a joke, like, or, you know, a laugh, like kind of thing, you know. You talking about light skin, you know, or whatever, light skinned brothers and whatnot, you know, dark skinned brother, whatever. And you're like, well, yeah, you know, well, it appears to me that the light skinned brothers got something on the dark skinned brother because the baddest nigga was a light skinned nigga. And they called him Detroit Red. It was Malcolm X, the greatest revolutionary philosopher. In a sense, some people say was a light-skinned nigga, Huey P. Newton. So we Adam Clayton Powell, you know. But the whole point, again, goes back to the imagery that's generated in the minds of our males. You know, and how, because one is black, doesn't necessarily make him black. Because the whole point is that it's still Superman. Like when the white bikers, I don't know if it was Hell's Angels or one of the other white bike clubs. You know, Obama became president, you know, all the euphoria and whatnot, went down. The white boys went and got t-shirts made. And on the t-shirt, it's just simply saying, it's still the White House. It's still the White House. Now you fill in the rest. That's what t-shirts they literally had made. I saw photos of them wearing. These were bikers. I don't know if they was Hell's Angels or not. No, whatever. You know, the famous Hell's Angels, whatever. You know what I'm saying? But the imagery. You know, and what was that designed to do? Well, it was designed to appease a certain class of black people, the Negro bourgeoisie, and some of the black petty bourgeoisie. It was designed to please them. It was a concession. It was a handout. Now they may have had a positive effect on our boys. I'm not saying it didn't. You know, or our youth. Who are young and impressionable. But the bigger picture is what? Still Superman. And the psychology is still the same. Superman's lines didn't change. Psychology never changed. Only the outward appearance did. You know, this is why you see this production of Black Panther. You know, it's okay. Well, it's a dominant field of white superheroes and comic books, Marvel comic books. And so, okay, well, we're gonna create the Black Panther. It's like, yeah, it's a countermeasure to white supremacy, the white images. that has effects on boys. So now let's go back to the Barbie doll. Same similar thing. It was more like, you know, well, shit, you know, why y'all don't make no black dolls? So we'll make some black dolls then. But it's still Barbie. It's still Barbie. Regardless. So this Barbie thing pretty much is international. So in Southern Africa, they did this experiment in Africa where they got little black girls, they lined them up, and they put a black doll and a white doll on a table. Each one of the little girls picked which doll they thought was the pretty doll. And those little girls picked the white doll. They didn't pick the black doll. Now, anytime you have some little girls that will pick the white doll, you know right then and there, that's a catastrophe. There's no excuse, none whatsoever. All the apologists can't come running apologizing for shit that the bad whites did, none of that shit. It's revolution time. Shouldn't be nothing less. Shouldn't be anything less. George Washington them didn't settle for anything less. They identified their problem. They put a label on their problem. They defined it, and they moved in the desired manner. They referred to it as tyranny. They met tyranny with rebellion and determination. And it's rather ironic that they did. We're going to get back to that. And so this reproduction of this Barbie, what does it say to the signal that it sends to the black young male? What signal does it send? That's the question. It sends a very strong message. It's a constant internalization process. And the more and more one internalizes, the lesser and lesser and lesser and lesser and lesser that young black males can see black female body in mind to a certain degree. Unless she's wearing the thong. But that imagery in that type of setting, you're going to be successful. You're going to be well-mannered, speak the Queen's English, or whatnot, professional or whatever. This is what you should end up with. Is Barbie ghetto or not? No, Barbie's not. Barbie is what all the labels that they like to apply to themselves. You know, elegant, exquisite, you know, things of that nature. It's amazing how this type of shit works. But it's very effective. It's very effective. And of course, what the signal does it send to black female mind, to the black psyche? Of course, we talked. We just mentioned the experiment they did in Africa, you know, with the little girl, and of course the terrorism that our people were conditioned under, the colonized mind. You know what I'm saying, due to the apartheid system, the confiscation of Africa. You know, the scramble for Africa in the late 19th century, you know what I'm saying? But before that, you know, the Dutch or whatever, you know, the people from the Netherlands are coming in the southern Africa in the 18th century, the 17th century, you know. And now, you know, of course, crying wolf in such places as Zimbabwe under the great leadership of Robert Mugabe, who fought just like George Washington did. He took a page out of George Washington's book against the British. And they went through Chimurenga after Chimurenga after Chimurenga. That's the terminology that they use in their own language. Which so much so the war liberation of determination. And they kicked the British out. But it was a process. And there were casualties. But they weren't denied. Like the people in Vietnam, but the colonized mind. And so the descendants of the terrorists who came got the audacity and the nerve to cry wolf when it was land redistribution time. So he's working towards the deconstruction of colonization, beginning with the mental. And the image is kicking the white image out of their minds in that part of Africa. And for those who talking that shit about freedom, there's certain processes, certain equations, certain points that being left out, you wasting your time. And we would have to look at them and question them and put them under the goddamn microscope and see what's going on with them. Whether or not we can trust what they're saying to us collectively and trying to make themselves as leaders. And so that is those movies, in essence, you know, with Will Smith and this imagery, you know, this Margot Robbie chick, you know. And, of course, in her subconscious, she want one too. You know, she want one too. She want a Mandingo too. It is what it is, you know. It is what it is, and like I said, this norm, this caste type of thing about the black body, black male body sacrificing himself for the black female body, and that Walking Dead shit when it first came out, everybody loved T-Dog, everybody favorite character in the movie until T-Dog gave up his life for the white, so the white skin run and escape when he was using the prison as a place to stick. And the zombies got up in there, and they was trying to slide the door back. T-Dog stepped up in there so he could get away. He gave up his life. So when our boys see that, our youth see that, our young people see that, our young adults, we see that shit, we willing to bet, you know, we be the first ones, you know, the first ones to jump. You know, first ones to jump. We be the first ones, you know, to help some white person quicker than anybody else. No, this is a conditioning, and I'm not saying even if you didn't have it, that's just who we are anyway. Naturally, our humanity comes out of us in a flash, in a split second. After all, we the original people on earth. We put everybody else here. We put everybody else here. We put the brown here, the red here, yellow here, and last, yeah, white people. We put them here too. Imagery, once they guide themselves in a position in a certain way, then of course in their subconscious is what to keep it going in order to maintain it. In order to maintain. The other thing is the television commercials. Let me touch on that. You look at the television commercials, you see this onslaught for the past, let's say, 3, 4, 5 years, very noticeable onslaught of what? Of mixed couples in the commercials. So that means somebody had to cast, you know, when the movie's coming on, it's going off, you see, you know, casting, you know, so-and-so, whatever, right? That's a person that goes out and does casting. He come, you know, he's got 10, 20 people on, you know, and he interviewed them. He gave them some lines. You know, say this little line. You know, do a little demonstration. We'll see, you know, see how you sound. See what kind of flair you got. You know, some of them just got that shit natural. You know, just like, you know, some people, you look at some people and you just getting like, you're like, yo, he's got it. He's natural at it. The next thing to do, come out of nowhere, but end up being filthy rich. Now he's got $100 million and all this kind of shit. And then who is he hanging out with? Who is he hanging around with? Who was his publicist? Who was his manager? And all these people. Who's the motherfucker that running will get him something to eat and all this kind of stuff? You know what I'm saying? You know, he go back, you know, or whatever, take his mom out of the neighborhood, you know, move in the Hamptons and whatnot. You know how he go. You know what I'm saying? You know, same old usual thing or all that shit. That next thing you probably in commercials, some goddamn selling some underwear, whatever, you know, modeling, the whole nine. You know, but the person that does the casting, you know, goes out and finds these people. And then he turns them over to these people who got these ideas, right? Because he's been instructed with, you know, what types of individuals that they want. Well, we want an interracial couple. We want a black man with a white woman for this one, a black man and a white woman for that one. We want a black man and a white woman for this one, a black man and a white woman for that. Now, AT&T. The cell phone commercial with the white girl in there. The white girl to become famous. It's no coincidence that all these commercials, a black man appears in these commercials. That's not coincidence. If you think that's coincidence, man, big ups to you for being that lost. But that's no coincidence. Those are carefully arranged commercials. Even the commercial, like in the beginning when she started making the commercial, those were carefully arranged commercials. Those angle shots that they would use, the angles, carefully arranged angles. You know how I know? Because you just do homework on shit. And I don't know, I might have stumbled upon this one here. But I saw an article. And of course, you know, these online pundits, you know, people always behind the scenes, you know, writing up some shit, you know, like not people do. You know what I'm saying? People go on YouTube and leaving all types of comments, mean and nasty, you know, whatnot, and all that kind of stuff. You know, so there was a complaint about the white girl, you know, her body. So you go back and look at the commercial, she's wearing jeans. So in somebody's mind, they saw it, they looked at her and they saw her. And so, well, you know, she's hot. You know, she's, you know, real talk, man, real shit. And the angles that they will show her, and she got uncomfortable with that. That's why you see now they don't show whole body shots of her. They show up the whole waist, down the whole waist, that's it. Or she's behind the counter now. Or she's behind some type of sign or a board or whatever, something like that. And she said that literally. And so they changed up the whole format. And we put these black dudes up in there, and they put the black dude behind the window. And, you know, man, literally, this is very subtle shit. But what's all effects of it? The effects is to do what? The effects is to try to replace the black female body with that one. And the more and more we internalize it, the lesser and lesser and lesser you start seeing us with black women in our psyche, in our minds. It's the imagery. And it's a constant. This is what you call a slave, a neo-colonial slave. Yeah, they'll take a crop of them, you know. And in the meantime, what's in the front of her mind? You know, all the attention. She could get rich and famous. You know, boom. That's by design. These are these commercials. Somebody's planning these commercials. Somebody's planning them. And the latest one, went in the restaurant. Now the black woman is in the commercial with her man. They in the restaurant. And it's like they're looking at a menu. You know, some genius come up with the idea to make the scene like, you know, they're looking to order food, but the whole point is the phones is the food. Like which food, you know, which phone you gonna order? Well, I always come here because you know I like the service. See, somebody planned that. Somebody, some genius sat down and thought of that line to give her character. Some genius, and probably getting paid out the wazoo, out the frame. Some genius thought of that and give her that line. Oh, I come here all the time because I like the service. You get it? You see? And this is what marketing is. This is a capitalist structure. This is a capitalist tactic, you know, profit motive, and capitalism is their Bible. So this is what they do. This is what they do. They sit down and plan all day, right? So there's a black couple in the restaurant, and she's interceding in her, and his wife talking to her, talking to him. She's interceding. Nobody didn't ask her anything. Then she intercedes. Get it? See? It's very subtle. It's very subtle. But those are commercials that come to mind, you know, just like Louis. But it's a number of them. They've gone out and actually found real couples. You know? But it's the imagery again. The interracial couples in the commercials are designed and targeted at black men, at the black male's mind, from a boy to an adult. And it's cool. It's cool. Color ain't got nothing to do with love. Got nothing to do with it. Ain't about race. If we keep saying that ain't about race shit, we're being worshipped than we already in now. We keep it up with that ain't about race shit. We really, 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 in the, I don't know, we're probably ain't much future left as far as this system. It's at its end. Ain't but a few threads hanging from the last wheel. The other dude done came off. And people feeling that shit out in the real world. People feeling. I ain't just got to say it, but people feeling that shit. Feeling it. But these commercials, you know. And then they show the children. You know the little light-skinned children, curly hair, whatever, something like that. All that's by design. And the man is on top of the world. He's the leader. Now, swap it around the other way, what you got. You get a white male with a black woman in the commercial. Here it is again. Look, I got your woman. I got your woman because you're powerless. I got your woman because I have the power. I determine how she's going to live. And I will only allow so much of that black shit. The rest of them got to come through me. Physically. Because I'm in the position to determine shit. What they call that? Financial stability. Now there's this other very subtle commercial. It's this commercial about these ice cream balls. You know those. White ice cream with the brown chocolate cover. And I can't think of the name of that ice cream, but I know the commercial. And there's a couple, you know, like when people, some people, you know, they want to go vacation to friends, they want to ride in the little boat, you know, through the little, what they call the Moulin Rouge or whatever, you know, the little whatever. You know, now when you consider that romantic, whatever, right? Go, we want a romantic little boat. But, all right, what is commercial with a white couple in the boat? So they make the ice cream fall from the sky. You know, these big old bars of ice fall from the sky, chocolate covered bars. So she's reaching up to grab, and the white boy's grabbing her. Like, what are you doing? See, there's a subtleness to that. And then they take the wrap off and show you with the ice, big chocolate bar covered ice cream on a stick. There's a subtleness too. Now that's a very, 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 very rare commercial. But the thing is that it's subjective. It's subjective. This is about as far as you can go, nigga. It's about as far as you can go. About as far as you can get. And we can acknowledge that, but we still got the power to determine your destiny. And of course, somebody sat and they carefully thought of the ice cream commercial. Carefully thought of that shit. You know, but it's very subtle. I remember the ones we saw, and they still doing, and they still doing, they still doing. You know, they get the little black boy, the little black youth, and what they do, they put a basketball in his hand, they put a football in his hand. I just like how they use Serena Williams. You know, when Serena and them started her inventing, you know, they wore the little beads in their hair, right? And you look around, you see the little girls all around the freaking world. I seen a picture with a little white girl somewhere in fucking Europe somewhere. The little girl, the little, it might have been in a web, obviously might have been in France or London, because that's where the French Open is, the British Open and whatnot. Even Australia, the Australian Open. But I seen a little white girl that was just like that. And so, of course, you know, white people don't mind that shit. They don't mind if it's a sport. They don't mind it. You know, my favorite player is a ring. You know, they don't mind that shit as long as the power structure don't be tampered with. As long as that don't be tampered with, we good. Like the white boy said, it's still the White House. It's still the White House. So y'all go, move in, have a nice time. You know, don't enjoy your stay while it lasts. Ain't nobody going to get out there and paint nothing. You want to put your little portraits inside of Louis Armstrong and Dr. King? We'll prove with Dr. King. We have no problem with that. You want to hang on the Thurgood Marshall? Whatever. We'll prove with that shit. Whatever you do, don't hang one of Marcus Garvey in there. Whatever you do, don't put one of Malcolm X in there. Whatever you do, don't put no picture of a rendition of Nat Turner in there. Whatever you do. Whatever you do. But they cool with that. But it's the imagery. So they put the basketball in the little boy's hand and the football in the little boy's hand. They made this commercial. What they do with the little white children? What do? They put the little white children in a scene like science and technology. You know, the next stage of banking, the next, you know, electronic banking, you know, science and whatnot, you know. And it was complained about that, as a matter of fact, years ago, you know, this stereotype. Even LeBron James, they even got LeBron James to do. And when it was brought to his attention, or when it got out and he got a whiff of it directly or indirectly. And we know somebody might know somebody that he know, that knows somebody that knows somebody. You know, but it's the GQ cover magazine was one of them, right? So what do? They go get a white woman, give him the basketball. He's wearing either black or a deep midnight color, blue navy color. And then he does this, man, look, it's obvious. He does the King Kong thing. You know, when the gorilla, you know, they, you know, like those bodybuilders, like, you know, like that. Or he does that with the basketball. And the white woman is in the commercial with the white dress on. That's no coincidence, period. And I believe something to the effect that he denied that that's what it was, no such thing, and all that. No, bullshit. They got that idea from the old movie poster of King Kong. King Kong had an infatuation for the white girl. When they fucked with the white girl, King Kong got mad and he did like that. That's where they got that idea from. And so when young black males see that book, with that magazine, and whatever store you find it, you know, like how they combine the Starbucks with the with the Barnes and Noble like type shit, you know. But he got the magazine rack like right there. You know what I'm saying? So no coincidence. That's by design. It won't take no genius, no rocket scientist to see that one. But when our youth look at it, our male youth look at that, we cannot see a black girl. We cannot see a black teenage girl. We cannot see a young black female adult. We can't see her. That's being eroded in our subconscious. In this country, image is everything. It's everything. Those are the ones that, you know, that stick out, you know, at the present moment, you know. And again, it's an attack on the black male psyche. And of course, you know, the commercials that deal with the drugs, you know, people with the HIV and whatnot, you know, where it's no coincidence that these commercials is showcasing, you know, black gay men, you know, kissing one another. There's no coincidence. Ain't no coincidence, period. There's no coincidence at all. None whatsoever. That is an attack on black masculinity. Straight up. All this shit about getting in touch with the feminine side and all that kind of shit. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that, I don't speak Chinese. I don't know what the fuck that shit is. Two Chinese people standing in front of me talking, I don't know what the fuck they saying. Real shit, real talk. You know, these are the things that we have to learn to preserve. Again, let's not get it twisted. Okay, what it is, you know what I'm saying? They're, I'm quite sure, are very nice and kind people who are gay. You know, even in the struggle, even move right now. You know, motherfucker, we were stepping forward, ain't afraid to go toe-to-toe with the pig. You know, no fear at all, period. Females, too. We ain't tripping out off that shit there. We talking about a social construct. We talking about a social construct here. This is what we talking about. This is a construct. And this construct is designed for a particular purpose. Again, if I snatch you from a position, I lost the position that you was in, or a comfortable position that you was in, and brought you over here and made you stay underneath my feet, you underneath me in the structure, in the power structure, then I'm damn sure I'm not going to let you out of it with ease unless you take the crown, unless you take the crown back. When there's rain, there's thunder. When there's thunder, there's rain. They go hand in glove. They go hand in glove. When it's hot, the crops at some point of the year can become in trouble. This is why C1 had to have a hotter than July. And so in the Africa, it grew so hot in that time of the season that the lion come out of his, you know, environment and go to the Nile River to get some to drink out the river. So these are natural laws here. But just social construct, what we talking about. But no coincidence at all. And of course, you know, the apparel companies, you know, it made it a religion. It's a religion. It's a religion now to have a pair of kicks, a pair of fly kicks. It's a religion to have a cool-ass cap with a design on it. It's a religion. It's a religion. It's a religion. And they'll hijack your shit if you let them. They'll take your red, black, and green colors and market that shit if you let them. Because it's about image, to get control of the image, to get control of it. To get control of it. We're going to stop right there and spend this last minute time on the outtake on the 4th of July. Might run out of time. What is the 4th of July? The 4th of July, first and foremost, is one big, huge hypocrisy. It is the ultimate slap in the face of African people. First and foremost, we could never see the 4th of July as anything rational, as anything practical, as anything. We there's no reasoning with the 4th of July. Other than the reason that there was a 4th of July that we can make sense out of. There's a book, matter of fact, written by it's a black historian named Gerald Horn. He even has placed the 4th of July, independence, 1776, in a whole another total different perspective that probably hardly, if you had 1,000 people on, maybe one of them got a clue. But their 4th of July was supposed to be based on their antagonistic relationship that came about over a period of time with the British Crown. Of course, you know, America was a British colony. Came 13 colonies, something that they copied, by the way, from the Iroquois Nation people, so-called Indians, the Federated States, the Federated Tribes. You know, it was a federation. And so that's where they got the colonies from. They got the ideology from the Iroquois people, just for the record. But to give you some certain point about taxation and all this kind of shit about representation and whatnot, differences of views of autonomous government as opposed to self-rule and whatnot, all this kind of shit, you know what I'm saying, a protectorate, so to speak. These are the type of language, type of terminology that they used when they went and confiscated Africa 100 and something years later. You know what I'm saying? And so here you had one George, one honky George. You know what a honky is? A honky is a white man that preys on black women. That's what a honky is. A cracker is a white man who whips black people. He may not be doing it with the leather lash anymore, but he's whipping us with legislation and all types of other underground tactics. He's changed up, but his ideology is the same. So that's what a cracker is. And there's nothing racist about the cracker. It's due to the fact that the relationship that we've had with them, an antagonistic one, a virtually irreconcilable one under the system of capitalism. We could never reconcile with capitalism because of its ambitions. Because if we could, then all of us would be wealthy. We'd all be wealthy. So it's a reconcilable system with black and brown people in particular. You know, they came here and did what they did to the so-called Indians. You ask them what they think. And then they went and got us in recent times. And then turned us into their SOL, the source of labor. Accumulated mass wealth, became a class, a white ruling class, as opposed to the rest of the whites. And then got to this point where they claimed that they was being treated bad by a tyrant and that they were under tyranny. I mean, it's incredible, an incredible display in psychopathology. And we don't want to hear that shit about what they treated they slave. We don't want to hear that shit. Those black women weren't giving themselves up so easy, so freely because they liked George Washington, because they was fond of George Washington, or they find that honky attractive, or any of that shit. Those women were most likely forced into those sexual encounters with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. And here the white people having a hard-on every year when they go up there to this estate, and he had a black soulmate named Sally Hemings, and they getting a hard-on because her descendants want to come up there too. But they were ultimate hypocrites. They could not see other human beings. As a matter of fact, give me a second. I'm going to pull up their shit. You tell me. Let's see here. What does this say? This is what they said. The Declaration of Independence, 1776. In Congress, July 4, 1776. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. And I quote, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers. Listen to this here. And to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. They had the nerve to say nature's God. They had the nerve to use the word God in this document. And then to continue, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. That they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government. Laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established not be changed for light and transient cause. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than which than to right themselves than to right themselves by abolishing the forms which they are accustomed to. But when a long train of abuses and patience pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpation, all having direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To provide this, let facts be submitted to a candid work. And then you go on and on and on and on and on to provide facts. Now, man, this is some incredible shit. At what point did any of them crackers think about black people? At what point did they do? It is nothing but contradictions in here.
Black power.
Every paragraph. What you got, time, Ray? Got call?
Nah. I just wanted to add, you know, just like you said.
Oh, yeah. Come on, man. Get in.
Red. How they was laying up there talking about how they added God up in there, you feel me? It's the same way how they do now when they taking when the white races, they lay up there, and whenever they want to push a certain narrative or a certain objective, they always use certain parts of the Dr. King's speech, you know what I'm saying, when they want to push a certain type of narrative to make them think that they're trying to include us when we already know they're trying to exclude us.
You open up a can of snakes with that one. Right on. That's good. This how it should be. You know, somebody can add on to the shit. You know, can add something to it. You know, put their 2 cents in. You know, yeah, our 2 cents is valuable around here, Jack. It might not get us that bubblegum out that machine, but believe you me, it's valuable around here. You know what I'm saying? Straight up. But, I mean, man, we could go back over this shit again. You know? But look what it says. No way in here. They talk about begging and pleading and praying on their knees and all this kind of shit. No. No, not at all. They say that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Now, somebody said, well, look here, man. Let's look at that. Let's look at that carefully. Now, this is where the Malcolm shit kick in at. Let's look at that carefully. Well, pay attention to the word now, that they are endowed by their creator, not the creator. Get it? With certain unalienable rights. You get it? Could those certain unalienable rights give them the right to dominate the persons who are not under their guide, which therefore justifies it? That's the type of psychology that they played with to justify the shit. Like, for instance, they used the words like primitive, savages, cannibals, pagans, idolaters, and all this kind of shit to justify the treatment of black people. To justify going and getting them, and that they claiming that they were bringing them the three C's: civilization, commerce, and Christianity. The three C's. Don't take my word for it. Go look it up. So they claiming they were bringing civilization. So they had to say, well, to bring people civilization, then they must have been uncivilized. So you paint them as uncivilized. So how you do that? Well, just say they're savages. Just say they're cannibals. You know, just call them primitive. Listen, primitive is just another word when they get to admitting that we was here first. All you got to do is look at the word primitive, go back and get you one of them good dictionaries, right? And just look at the root of it. Primitive is the same as the word prime. Prime is meaning big time, the first, the number one in the slot. Prime time, like Deion Sanders. He was the number one, called himself prime time. Okay, it's prime time. It's me, it's about me. Nobody, no one else. You see, what they call preseason. You know, they got the word primate, you know, the so-called ape. You know, of course, there's some other shit that they use with that. In terms of intelligence or IQ, about brain size and all this kind of shit. A whole lot of shit. You see, but this is what they did to set themselves up. So they must have obviously had selective amnesia when it came down to other people who they had under tyranny. And these white historians and all these experts in the history of George Washington, you know how they do, they put some of them on C-SPAN, CNN, and wherever, when it's a book festival or some shit, they go get some cat or some lecturer in a Ivy League school and whatnot. He's the number one expert on Monticello and all this kind of shit, George Washington. And he tell you how many pair of panties George Washington had. Shit. You go that deep with it and try to paint this eloquent picture of George Washington. Cared about his slaves. If you cared about your slaves, why you had them? Why you had them? Go back to Leo Tolstoy's quote. Picture me sitting on your back. And I've been sitting on your back for a long time. And you've been writhing in pain. And I just decide one day that I'm going to start caring about you. I'll feed you and I'll clothe you. But the one thing, I'm still sitting on your back. Ain't nothing like liberation. Ain't nothing like it. All that other shit is bullshit. even by their own words, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And there's an understanding in this country, in this society. When white people get on CNN, talk about our children and whatnot, you don't have to put the word white in front of it. When they talk about our government, they don't have to put the word white in front of it. Our schools. You don't have to use the word white. They don't call themselves Euro-American. You don't see Euro-American on the application or in any form or box that you have to check. None of that shit. And so when they were speaking, they were obviously talking about their own class, their own kind, dumbed down whites that you today probably would call trailer park trash. You know, the whites who don't, you know, who just as dumb as a fucking, dumb as a brick, you know, like this image about, you know, black people being low IQ and all this kind of shit. But this is vernacular I'm using. You know, like when we say nigger, you know, on the street, you know what I'm saying? So this is a common cultural vernacular of this country, the decadence that shows on a daily basis, right? But even with them, and then after the so-called independence, the War of Independence, they was having trouble, you know, with the poor whites. Shades Rebellion years later, you know, around the time of the so-called First Continental Congress in Philadelphia, where they got that Liberty Bell thing at that. And then, of course, that old lazy hole that they got out there in the harbor, you know, called the Statue of Liberty. It's amazing. They have all of that. And they had slaves. So on this day, there was no liberation for black people, no independence from black people. As a matter of fact, we was being used by as pawns on both sides. We were being used as pawns on both sides. The British came through. Well, look here. Y'all fight with us. Oh, shit. We'll free you. You'll be all right. You know, it's being used as pawns. We stuck in the middle, like we stuck in the middle now. We stuck in the middle between the Republicans and the Democrats. They give us Joe Biden, or they give us Donald Trump. You give us Donald Trump, or you damn if you do, damn if you don't. Only difference between Donald Trump and Joe Biden is Joe Biden just willing to give concessions. He just, you know, just concessions. Donald Trump was like, look, I've done more for black people than any president in the history of America. My track record spoke for itself. Make America great again. Make America great again. And we'll remember this day, 1776. How many years are we talking about? 1876, 1976, 86, 210, 96, 220. 06, 230, 16, 240, and 7. So we live with 247, 2.5 centuries almost. And when the black man get to talking about slavery and the effects of it today, what they felt, man, you got to stop living in the past. That was a long time ago, man. We talking about today, moving forward. We can't stay stuck in the past. Well, goddamn it, they ain't allow you to stay. They ain't allow you to forget the day. And that shit was. That shit was. It's got 1865 beat. See, that's a colonized mind. The Public Enemy wrote a song called Hitler Day. When he get around the 4th of July, he said, 4th of July, goddamn lie. When did we ever get a piece of the pie? He summed it up right there. So what celebration? And we've all took part in it. We've all done it. Because we ain't no new better. Because our political conscience level was dismal. It was dismal. They ain't got no white man nowhere on this earth can rationalize why black people should celebrate with them. There's no white man that can bring up any reason that's reasonable to say, hey, this, that, and the other. And this shit about the Boston Tea Party going into the harbor, throwing the tea over as the spark to the revolution. Oh, and what do they do to make us feel good? It's always a black man that yelled the charge, that led the charge, that yelled charge, led the charge. His name was Crispus Attucks. Yeah, you would teach that shit in school to our children because of what? But what you teaching them about in that time? First man to die in the American Revolution was a black man. I remember that shit when I was in school. Made a nigga feel good because I didn't know any better. Colonized mind. Will take on the mind, the actions of the colonizer. He will talk like him, walk like him, speak like him, dress like him, carry on like him, worship his God with him. These are the facts. I have to make this shit up. Now there's something else that I said, you know, beginning that Gerald Horn wrote a book. You have to give it to the old dude. He know his shit. He's well researched. If you haven't heard him, his name is Gerald Horn. Last name H-O-R-N with an E on the end. He wrote a book called The Counter-Revolution Against 1776. Gerald Horn said all that shit about the revolution was bullshit. It was bullshit. So somebody wrote a like an essay or whatever, some Fred Schledger dude. Well, this is dated March 17, 2021. You want to read some, you know, just give a little, you know, background, a little idea right quick while we got time. You know, he says, and this is the rhetoric right here. Nearly 250 years after the American Revolution, the event continues to exert a powerful influence on the present. The ideals of the revolution, human equality, and the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness have a deep appeal to Americans, and moreover have inspired political idealists and revolutionaries around the world. It's incredible. And incredible. Now, in 2014, Professor Gerald Horn of the University of Houston published a book with a startling thesis that the American Revolution, check this out, that the American Revolution was fought to preserve slavery. Man, this was no genuine revolution, Horn argued, but a counter-revolution waged to defend slavery against the true revolutionary force. Get this here, the abolitionist British Empire. Hence the name of the book, The Counter-Revolution of 1776. The American victory was not a progressive or world historic event. It was a catastrophe. Horn suggests an analogy. The American Revolution created the first apartheid. I'm going to see who can refute that. The first apartheid state. Some people say apartheid. Horn's thesis, if true, would be a fundamental rewriting of American and world history. If the United States was born in a struggle not for political liberty, but rather to preserve the rich system of property in man, and 1776 was nothing but a prelude to the founding of the Confederate States of America in 1861. The long-standing appreciation of the American Revolution's direct impact on the French Revolution of 1789 and all the revolutions that would have followed, a position supported by Marx and Engels, would also be false. Moreover, if the British Empire were the revolutionary force in the contest with the American colonists, the well-established understanding of its centrality to imperialist reaction over the course of the 19th century in Ireland, India, Egypt, China, and South Africa, to name a few, but also be called them the question. This dude must be critiquing his conclusion or whatever. He says, the truth is this. Horn's scholarship does not stand up to the slightest scrutiny. Horn's work is worse than inaccurate. It is in large measure a work of fiction. See, if somebody, you know, is challenging his position, you know. But it's some research, some archives that led him to this conclusion. Now, there's this Hegelian tactic that could be used here, you know, to put Horn out there and say, boom, you know, you tell this story, and then we can come and demolish the story. We get enough people to get behind it first so we can confuse them. So when somebody else puts somebody, they won't know who to believe. That's Hegelian tactic. It's called the Hegelian dialectic tactic, where the left and the right hand is working together, even though they appear outwardly as the opposition, like Trump and Biden appear outwardly as the opposition, yet they have the same business partners, links, and whatnot with the Russians. But they appear outwardly adversaries who disdain one another. This is our take on the 4th of July. The 4th of July. They can have their 4th of July. We believe that black people in this country must raise their political awareness. To exercise our right to freedom. Other nations have come along in history of struggle, and they raised their conscious level. They understood what and who their enemies were, and some of them looked just like their own. Our problems are chronic. Our problems are extreme. You know, some people say you fight fire with fire. I just say you fight fire simply with water. Water is the enemy of fire. Fire is the enemy of water. Which ones outweigh the other? But that 4th of July is a joke. But the white collective needs it in order to keep feeling good their existence about their situation. How can you have justice on stolen land? How can you give people justice? How can you give the descendants of the people that you stole the land from? How can you give their grandchildren justice? How could you do it? So either way it goes, it's bullshit. But the sad part is that the people keep falling for it over and over again. But the laws of nature is working against this thing. Inevitable that the people must transform society, or we all in trouble. So on that note, we're going to end. I want to thank those who have been listening for listening. Again, this is not CNN, this ain't Fox, this ain't MSNBC. This is In Defense of the People Radio, brought to you by People's Political Party. I'm your host, Brother Nat, Chairman of People's Political Party, my calls, for the motherland, our National Minister of Defense. And our DJ on the ones, tools, our assault technician, Sister Amino Shoons, our National Minister of Communication. It's stay tuned next week for the next show. And we just might get on this thing about the Supreme Court tracking down affirmative action and what that's all about. So next week, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, your whole rule, Black Power, all power to the people. We out.
Yo, turn this motherfucking shit up.
Mad crack of rapping. Peter Tosh tried to tell us what happened. He was saying it's